How's it going? Good? You're a lively bunch this morning. Wanted to mention, it's November. That's the worst. It's cold. It's a time of wool hats, toques, jackets, mustaches. We get to that. Yes, it's November. Who here is going to celebrate November? Who here doesn't know what November is? Every guy here, by the end of the month, I would like to see you with a mustache. That is the goal of Movember, to raise money for male-related cancer. So actually, check it out, Google Movember, and you'll see some cool stuff on that. But it's November. Hats, toques, things for cold, also known as August here in town. If you'll remember, I think it was August 16th, it snowed. Why do we live here? I love it here. This week, we're talking about the whisper that lifts us. That lifts us up. Last week, Pastor Marlo talked about our sermon series point of the hearing people speak God's word into your life. I just want to remind you guys, if you miss any of our sermons, if you miss any of our weekly sermons here at the church, go to our website, and we have podcasts up every week that you can, if you miss it, check it out, put it on your phone, you can listen to it on the bus, whatever. So what I want to talk to you guys today about is fear. I think we've all been scared. I think we've all experienced fear on some level. Fear is an emotion that changes how we think, how we live, and how we respond. There's a way of thinking in psychology that says that there's two reactions to fear, and that's fight or flight. That meaning that if on Friday night you were taking your kids out to get candy from houses, and I snuck up behind you and give you a little, hey. There's two possible reactions. Either you mess yourself, fall to the ground, cry, run away, or you return with some sort of ninja kick to my face. Fight or flight, fear makes you react. Sometimes in a positive way, sometimes in a negative way. Fear is something that causes us to move psychologically, spiritually, and physically. It's gripping. It's a way that we stay alive. But it can also be completely illogical. Completely illogical. It can be crippling. In preparation for today, I was going just on Google and started to kind of research some of these different fears and fears people have. So I have a list of phobias I came up with. And they're pretty neat, let me tell you. So let's go through a couple of them. You're going to have to bear with me through the pronunciations because this is all psychology major stuff and I'm just a theology major, so that's not going to work out. But the first one is allophobia, if we could get that next slide up there. That is a crippling fear of flutes. Needless to say, probably not going to the symphony orchestra anytime soon if you have that one. Moving on, chinophobia, which is the fear of snow. Happy November. Shouldn't live up in Edmonton. Next one is dementophobia, which is the fear of insanity, which kind of in a roundabout way just is a circle. Not good. The next one, Dutch phobia. Speaks for itself, you're terrified of Dutch people. I'm half Dutch. I completely get it. Ecclesiophobia, let's say that wrong. That's fear of church. Awkward. Nomophobia, which is the fear of losing your cell phone. And this one's interesting because I was reading about this, and this is a legitimate psychological phobia, and especially in teenagers. But in everybody, there are signs of this as an actual, like, crippling fear in people's minds. Have you ever lost your phone? Just been like, where is it? Where'd it go? Where is it? And you're like looking under every cushion in your house. You're freaking out. Did I leave it in my car? And then you realize it's in your pocket the whole time. And I do that all the time. This one's great. Papophobia is a horrible fear of the Pope. Look how friendly he looks. What's he gonna do? Pogonophobia, a fear of beards. That's a different story, different time. My wife was very displeased when I did that. Let's move on. Well, some of these are crazy and fun to laugh at. They're real fears. People have these. When I was a little kid, I was terrified of cows. Cows, the most illogical, the dumbest animal to be scared of. Their greatest predator in the wild is holes in the ground. Like, why was I scared of cows? But I would have reoccurring nightmares. I was so scared of these things. So I was thinking, what are some other fears I had? My greatest fear to date is bees. I'm almost 300 pounds, but if a little bee comes near me, I'm done. Game over. I'm out of here. I remember one time, I think I mentioned before, I worked at Superior Lumber. Uh-oh. Hans was my boss, and he's not going to like this story. So I just realized this. So we drive forklifts, big forklifts, and I was wearing my safety vest, though, so it was okay. We're on this forklift, and I'm unloading a truck, and several large bees or wasps surrounded me on said forklift, and in the middle of full motion, I may have jumped off of said forklift in fear, screaming as said forklift continued on to drive for a period of time. That was before they had security cameras, so I still had a job. But we're past that now. We're good. Yeah? Right? Awesome. I was asking some friends about what their greatest fears are, and one of my buddies said, always said, birds. Birds are scary. I'm like, I don't get it. Birds are not that scary. Like, they're not that bad. I had a pet bird as a kid. It was not very much fun, but they're not scary. Then my wife told me a story about her friend from like 2 weeks ago. There was a raven that, a raven, like the big, like a crow on steroids, like the big raven that lived in her backyard, and every time she would walk outside, it would attack her. Like this full eagle, crazy on her. And then she'd run into the house and she'd be washing dishes and all of a sudden the bird would come to the window. Just kind of like, hey, don't forget I'm here. I'm coming for you later. It's terrifying. I would be so scared of that. Fear. It's funny that these people have these strange fears, but fear is actually something that we all deal with. It's something that has serious impact on how we live our lives, how we feel day to day when we wake up, when we go to bed. You ever been at a point where you're just crippled by fear, by doubt? Where you just feel like life has thrown too much at you? You're not going to make it. And this is the end. I think there's times in all of our lives where we hit a moment like this on some level. And it's different for all of us. We're all on different levels of fear. But at the end of the day, we've all dealt with this in some way, shape, or form. This is not a new thing. People have been going through fear and doubt and this type of attitude since Adam and Eve were kicked out of the garden. But there's one story in the Bible that really connects with me on this concept. That involves David. I spoke on David last time I was up here on my first Sunday. A quick refresher course in David. David was a small boy. He was a shepherd. He was really the runt of the litter. And God sends a messenger to tell him, you're going to be the king of Israel. You're going to be the king of God's nation, his chosen people. This is a little boy. Now he goes up through the ranks, and you may remember him, whether you've been to church or not, you've probably heard of David and Goliath, where David slays this terrorist giant who is probably like 12 feet tall or whatever, make me look like a little shrimp. And all he uses is a slingshot and some rope. I mean, and some rocks. Yeah, slingshot and rope. Slingshot and rocks. Knocks this guy out, takes over, wins the war, moves up. He's a hero. He's winning all these battles for the king at the time, Saul, who eventually he knows he's going to succeed, and Saul knows he's going to succeed eventually one day. And his celebrity is growing. His star is on the rise. Like, David is a rock star. And then Saul starts to notice that. Starts to notice, people like him a lot more than they like me. You know, he gets a lot more round of applause. He gets a lot more attention. And Saul becomes desperately jealous of David. So Saul determines that the only way to deal with David is to kill him. So Saul has a series of events where he attempts to kill David, and David doesn't spend the next decade of his life as a superstar king, winning battles, any of that cool stuff. He ends up being a desperate man on the run. He's a wanted man. There's a bounty on his head. Everybody wants to kill him. He just has all this stress on his life, and he's going from town to town. He's going through all these battles with Saul, but he's just in this stressful, stressful place. And we catch up with David at this point where he's been going around town to town trying to gather enough troops to have a big battle with Saul. So we meet up with him in 1 Samuel 31-6. It says, 3 days later, when David and his men arrived home at the town in Ziklag, they found that the Ammonites and had made a raid into the Negev and Ziklag. Work with me on this one, guys. These are some weird names. They had crushed Ziklag and burned it to the ground. They had carried off the women and children and everyone else, but without killing anyone. When David and his men saw the ruins and realized what had happened to their families, they wept until they could not weep any longer. David's two wives, Ahinoam from Jezreel and Abigail, the widow of Nabal from Carmel, were among those captured. David was now in great danger because all his men were very bitter about losing their sons and daughters, and they began to talk of stoning him. So David, chosen by God, promised all this huge success. He's promised that he's going to be king. He's going to do all these great things. He's a wanted man. He's being hunted. There's a bounty on his head, and he's just going from town to town. He's got this stress on his life everywhere he goes. Everywhere he goes, he's a constant reminder that I'm not comfortable. I'm not sleeping where I should be. I'm not with the people I want to be with necessarily. All these promises were given to me, and it's not working out. He shows up back from finding people to continue to fight this stressful battle, and he sees that the town that his family was at has been burned to the ground, completely burned. Looking probably for his, I can only imagine how awful that is, looking for your family's bodies, and they're not there, and then having the realization that they've been taken. I'm never going to see them again. And in war, when your family got taken, some pretty bad stuff happens to them. So I can just imagine the stress that's been going on in his life for so long, and then next thing you know, everything is lost. Everything is lost. You know, his men have supported him. They've been with him for this long, stressful time. And now they're angry and they're thinking about killing him. And he can hear the whispers of, let's stone him. Let's crush his body. Let's murder him. He's beaten. He's hurt. He's broken. His leadership is now being slandered and questioned. He's been faithful for so, so long. And he's put on this happy face. But in the presence of so much stress and in the presence of this new toppling moment, he can't pretend it's okay anymore. He can't pretend that yeah, it's fine. No, I'll soldier through. You know, God's got this plan for my life. He's done. This is the end. And he breaks down and he weeps and he cries like he's never wept before. And this moment is what's often described as a dark night of the soul. In the Bible's book that we're working through, that's what he describes it as. And I think we all understand what they're saying with that, but it's a little bit of a weird term to consistently go back and forth on, because I think if you came up to me and you're like, hey, Jeff, how you doing? And I was like, yeah, you know, I'm just really having a dark night of the soul right now. We're not going to connect on that level. So I was just going to call it a dark night, but that just makes me think of the Batman movies. And I don't want you associating David with Christian Bale. So we're going to move away from that, and I want you guys to... We're going to call this what it really is, what I think we've all had before, is a lonely moment, a broken moment, a moment where there's no hope, where we look at the circumstances and we really just think, this is the end. In the scriptures, David's time of weeping is about a sentence long, just one sentence, one verse, but I believe it would have been a fair amount of time. David's on his hands and knees, just begging God and whining. And I honestly believe probably feeling a little bit sorry for himself. The point where all of this standing strong and in the face of stress and danger and all the things that life had to throw at him, he just finally can't take it anymore. Woe is me. My family's gone. Imagine your family's been taken when you go home today. He's in that type of distress. And he sobs and cries out to God and just, I think, complains and questions him a little bit. Why is this happening? How could this happen to me? I've been so faithful. But something happens in the next verse. Something happened in that moment. Something happened in that, what I believe to be probably a night or so of weeping and brokenness in that lonely moment. And David gets up, he moves forward, he collects his army, he goes out, finds the army that took his family, that took his men's families, he wins the battle against them, and he brings back everything that was taken and then some. Something happened in that moment. In David's most weak and broken thoughts, everything changed. You see, it's in our deepest, darkest moments where God shows up and saves us. He's called us to something greater than our current circumstances. And it's in these lonely moments when everything else is stripped away, where we're vulnerable, where we're broken, where we're alone, that we're able to hear the whisper of God as he calls us to stand up and march on, to gather our troops and move forward. Where God quietly comes and whispers peace into our broken moments. As followers of God, it's important to understand that no matter what circumstances you're dealing with today, that God has a plan for you and he's going to work through that with you. He's going to bring you through that, absolutely. But it seems that the only time that we are really willing to listen at times is when we're so desperate we have no other choice. Where, because everything else has been stripped away, every distraction, everything else that we can turn to, there's no hope in anywhere else but God that we look at that. And that's not right either, but I've been there. It's so easy to use God as this last resort. But even when we do that, he still shows up and shares his encouragement with us. You know, we've learned through this series all the ways that God speaks to us. Last week we talked about God speaking to us through other people. We've talked about God speaking to us through his word, and I encourage everybody, if you're in a circumstance right now or if you're in a situation where you need to hear God, go home, read your Bible. Be silent before God. Go through the things that we've talked about. Seek God in all these different ways, and I guarantee he's going to speak to you in some way. But here's the hardest point. Because as much as I can tell you, you know what, and I believe it and I know it, God is going to come into your circumstance, whatever you're going through, whatever broken situation you're in, that he's going to show up and fix it and he's going to help you out and he will sustain you through this time. Absolutely. But what happens when that doesn't work out like we think it's going to? Or like we pray it's going to? Or like someone told us it's going to? Maybe somebody came to you and said, you know, God told me whatever's going on, it's going to work out. But it's still been a year and I still can't have a kid. And that family member's still sick. That person still died. I still lost my job. What happens when our plans and what we think God is going to do don't line up? I'm going to tell you a story about in the Bible when Jesus was with his disciples. One time they went out onto a boat. I'm sure a lot of you guys have heard this story, where they go onto the boat and it becomes increasingly stormy. Like some big storms. I was reading up on this, and the body of water that they were at was right next to some mountains, so it wasn't uncommon for, like, you know how the mountains mess up things in Alberta, and they just get those big thunderstorms in the middle of the summer that come out of nowhere? Same type of thing. These big storms just come out of nowhere. So they would have been out on the boat, they're just chilling, and next thing you know, there's just this hurricane, gale force winds coming out. Jesus is asleep on a pillow on the boat, and the disciples are kind of manning the ship. And pretty quickly, it becomes a very scary, scary situation. Now, being from Alberta, I haven't spent a lot of time on a boat. You know, maybe at Alberta Beach. You don't want to fall in the water because you'll get a rash. It's not about necessarily, you know, it's not about drowning. It's about skin hygiene. But I can only imagine being on a boat. You know, I'll quickly say, this summer, there was a very windy day, and me and Kelly decided that we were going fishing no matter what, even if it was whitecaps, and we probably almost died. It was terrifying. We didn't catch any fish. We almost capsized like 6 times. So boats are not the most stable thing in a storm. So these disciples are just freaking out. I can only imagine lightning's coming, and lightning and water don't mix very well, and they're freaking out. And they get to the point where, surely this is the end. We're going to die. And they think, you know what? Who turned water into wine? Who took just a few pieces of bread and fish and turned it to feed 5,000 people? There's this guy who's a pretty cool guy. He can do some pretty cool things. Maybe we should ask Jesus. Where is Jesus? What's he going to do? And he's sleeping. And they ask Jesus, hey, don't you care that we're going to drown? Don't you even care? What are you doing? Our lives are in danger. Our lives are in peril. Everything that we are is in question here. And you are sleeping through it. Don't you care that we're going to drown? I've experienced this in my own life. And some of my friends are going to walk down memory lane with me on this one. But I was in my first year of Bible college, and I was dating a girl. It was my first girlfriend ever. It was not my wife yet. And we dated for about 8 months or so. And things were really great, and I decided, you know what? I love this girl. You know, first girlfriend, right? Like, you think you're in love. You fall in love real quick, real hard. And I'm absolutely infatuated with this girl, but 8 months in, she starts to get sick. And it's just little things at first, like some swelling in her hands and whatnot. And I still don't understand all the logistics of the medical stuff, but long story short, throughout about a year into dating, she was diagnosed with an autoimmune disease that would basically cause her kidneys to fail and organs to shut down. And there was no cure for it, as we found out. And the only way to deal with it was to put into remission through 6 months of chemotherapy and some pretty intense intravenous steroids. So I'm at this point here where I'm like, you know what? Yeah, that's fine. I'm going to marry this girl anyways. Eventually, when this all works out, I'm totally in love with this girl. Completely committed, so I stuck around. And I think it was about December or so, things had gotten worse. Things had gotten worse. I had prayed to God. I was like, God, you know what? Like, I know you can heal her. I know you're going to heal her. Like, we would pray for her. Everyone's praying for her. Oh, people would say, don't worry, she's going to be fine. She's going to make it through this. You guys will be fine. And I believed it, and I believed it, and I believed it, and I believed it, and I believed it. But nothing changed. In fact, things just continually got worse. And people would ask me, well, how are you staying strong? They're like, well, God's got this. You know, it's going to be fine. And I would put on this happy face and this brave face. And people would be like, oh, yeah, like Jeff's going dealing with this pretty well, I think. They're pretty strong through it. And I remember one night I was actually driving back to Beaumont down the dark 50th Street, probably 2 in the morning, coming back from a friend's house. And I was doing my normal prayer to God kind of in the silence of the car. And finally I just said, God, like, you know, heal her, same thing. And in that moment, I was done. I just like started to yell out to God, what are you doing? Like, I believe you can heal people. I've heard you've healed people. I've seen you heal people. If you would just heal this girl, everything would be better. Everything would be fine. We could move on with our lives. These plans that I have would they'd be functional. They'd happen. I started just screaming and questioning God, like, why aren't you doing this? What is, like, I don't, why? It felt like he was asleep. It felt like he didn't care anymore. And I cried and I was broken. And I powered through some more, even though I was still in this awful state. And I put on the happy face and we worked through things. And then she dumped me. Now you can laugh, it's okay. Then she dumped me. And in that moment, I felt like, why did I even go through that? What was the point of all that? Why did I have to endure through this emotional state for so long? Go through chemotherapy. If you've ever been through chemotherapy with somebody, you know it's awful. It's the worst. Why did we go through that? And we kind of lost connection, as tends to happen when you break up, and we didn't see each other for the whole summer. And I was up in the town she lived in that fall. And I saw her across the Walmart, and we kind of had one of those awkward, kind of like, should we say something? I put your head down. I'm just going to look over at these diapers over here. You know, you know, pretend. And finally, I was like, okay, grow up. I was 20 at the time. You're a 20-year-old. You're a man. Time to be a grown-up. We talked, and I looked at her, and she, you know what? I asked her, how are you doing? Great. She looked great. She looked healthy. She was in remission. She was moving on and going to school. I was going back to school. And in that moment, I really realized everything I prayed for that night had come true. Now, the difference was, it wasn't how I thought it was going to be. It wasn't how I was screaming at God. It wasn't the plan that I had. It wasn't the thing that I was frustrated that he wouldn't deliver. It wasn't how I thought it was going to be. But yet, he still lifted me up in my brokenness. So when we look back at our friends on the boat, Jesus stands up, and we all know he rebukes the wind. He says, quiet, stop blowing, stop the waves, be still. And everybody's amazed by this, which is awesome. But then he turns and he rebukes his disciples, and rebukes is a big word for says, kind of gives them a little spanking. And he says, you know what? Why do you guys have so little faith? And I always thought that this was because, you know, they didn't believe that he could calm the storm. But I really don't think that that's what he's getting at there. I think he's trying to say, why did you have no faith? I was on your boat. I didn't need to stand up and calm it for you. Did you really think that as long as I was on your boat that you were going to die, that this was the end, that this was over? If they would have just believed in what Jesus could do in who they had with them, I don't think they're capsizing. Now, the waves could have been scary. The waters would have been choppy. And it would have been super scary. But Jesus was going to be there all the same. And I think that there's a lesson for us in that. It's not always about God showing up and changing the circumstances on the spot. And yes, I do believe that faith leads to miracles, absolutely, but sometimes there's something greater that God wants to do through your circumstances, whether that's through teaching you a lesson or teaching someone else a lesson. Your plan is not always his plan. If we could completely understand God and everything about him, then I don't know how much we would worship him. We worship him because he is so much greater than us. His ways are so much different and better than us. It's not always going to be the way that we think it's going to be. Sometimes that's hard to wrap our heads around, but it absolutely is. And my own life is an example of that. My ex-girlfriend moved on. She was healthy. I think she's still healthy. We don't really talk. I found my wife's age, and I think it was an upgrade. I'm okay with that, right? She's all right. But life will be better if you follow God's plan as opposed to your own. So here's the question I have for you guys today. Where are you at? What is the circumstance that you're going through this morning? What's going on where you just feel fear, doubt, brokenness? Maybe you've read your Bible. Maybe you've had someone speak something into your life. Some of the things we've talked about, but things haven't changed. Maybe you're broken and nobody knows it. You're putting on that happy face. You're putting on that strong front. But you feel like God's gone silent. You feel like Jesus is asleep on your boat. If we get the band to come out, that'd be great. Maybe you feel like Jesus is absent and God has gone completely silent. Here's my challenge. Know that Jesus is on your boat. He's with you always. He's never abandoning you. Even though circumstances might seem different than what you think they should be, even though they might appear like nothing is working, like you've been putting on a strong face for so long, these things aren't working out. Know that Jesus is with you. And he doesn't abandon you. He doesn't go to sleep. So we're going to do something here. We're going to take a minute in silence. We're just going to be quiet before God. Mm-hmm. And if you've got something that's going on, if you're broken, if you haven't heard from God in a while, we're going to be silent and hear the whisper that God uses to lift us up. We're going to be silent for a minute, and then the band's going to play a song. And in these moments, I want you guys to just focus in. So often with all the distractions we have, even to just turn off the radio and drive is a chore and difficult. But in this moment of silence, listen for that still, quiet whisper where God will share what he needs to share with you. And then the band's going to play a song, and it's, the lyrics are great. I love this song, and it's, "This is not the end." And we're going to declare as a church that whatever you're going through, this isn't the end. Jesus is on my boat, and I'm going to get up, rally the troops, and move forward. I'm going to get a couple of the pastoral team to come up to the front too, or some church leaders. If you need somebody to pray with, the front row here is open. We'd love to pray with you. I'm going to turn it over to the band now.